Hello, and welcome to the 14th night of Millennial 2018. This should be a good one because this is with can that be right? Let me just check this because I'm sure there are 15 nights until 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yes, the 13th night, right? That makes sense. Okay. Welcome to the 13th night of Millennial 2018. And this is going to be a very busy night because there are seven hangouts tonight. And in an hour from now, that's Semi O'Gog. And then an hour later, the Bronx Blogger. An hour after that, the Distributist. 2 hours after that, I'll have a wee break. 2 hours after that, Cultured Thug. An hour after that, Jesse Lee Peterson. And then an hour after that, Apollonian Jam. And by that time, I hope that I'm still cogent and awake by that point. So we'll see how it goes. But first, it's Asha Logos. Now, before I introduce him, obviously there was a problem the other night. He was due to appear, I think, two nights ago, but there was a power cut in his area, so he couldn't make it. But he was very, I think he was looking forward to appearing, so we rearranged it, and here he is tonight. So, welcome, Asha Logos, to Millennial.
Thank you for having me, especially considering this is round two. I appreciate your patience. And I wanted to
Oh, that's
say
fine.
genuinely thank you for what you're doing here with Millennial. And I hope everyone recognizes just how important things like this are in the broader scheme of things. And more importantly, how effort and time intensive this must be. I don't envy you in the least in this process, but I very much appreciate what you're doing. And by the way, did you
Well,
say
thank you very
seven?
much.
Did you say seven interviews just today?
Seven tonight, yes. This is the first of seven, yeah.
That is
So
impressive.
I'm relatively bright-eyed and bushy-tailed just now, so we'll see how it goes.
I'm glad I'm the first, and I'm not catching you at the tail end of that. But anyway.
Yeah, well, there's only 1 hour between most of them, so I won't have a chance to, wind down and get tired. That's what I'm hoping. I'll be able to sustained momentum throughout this. We'll see how it goes.
But anyway,
All
immense
right, so.
respect to you for this, and I hope that everybody else, I mean, I'm sure they do feel the same from everything I've heard. So thank you for
It
what you're
does seem to be. Thank you, and you're welcome. It does seem to be brightening people's spirits and having a good effect throughout the
doing.
community. So that's
Absolutely.
great. That's thank you. Sorry.
Oh,
Oh
sorry.
yeah, you've gone into the. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
I muted it.
Okay, so let's introduce. So talk about yourself and your channel, and yeah, what people can find there, and then we'll go into the background.
Yeah, so my channel is a bit different than most in the sense that I try to take a broader picture view of things. First, a little bit about me. I would say essentially I'm just someone who cares very deeply about these issues and our collective future. I think it all started with my obsession with history growing up. Even in my youngest years, I was kind of that oddball devouring military history and books on human origins and migrations. And just history in general. And over time, I just kind of fell in love with Western culture and people. And I felt such a deep resonance. And this has only grown over time. Interestingly, I would say I first fell in love with kind of the intellectual and martial and cultural type achievements. But over time, this sort of morphed into a love for the spirit of our people, if this makes sense. The pioneering spirit, that constant thirst for new shores and horizons, the constant curiosity, and I would say most of all that nobility and genuineness and magnanimity that seems to be such a trademark. And all of this and more is combined. It caused me to look upon all of this with an awe and respect. And I refuse to stand by and watch us lose this and be manipulated and deceived into becoming something very different than what we're, I think, meant to be. And I see that happening and it disturbs me. And so my channel, I think that it started with the Holodomor. That was kind of the breaking point for me, that started me down this path of video creation. I had quite a few relatives that lived in the larger German kulak communities in the region above the Black Sea when the Bolshevik Revolution commenced. And that area was just turned into a killing field. Several of these were patriarchs, and in their family journals, which I've been able to read since, it recounts them repeatedly lending a helping hand, ironically, to many of the same types of people that would later sweep through and rape and pillage and murder. Anywhere from 25 to 70 million dead, depending on the estimates you choose to trust. And these people seem to be targeted, at least broadly speaking, due to reasons of race, culture, and religion. And comparing this to another very well-known historical event in which civilians died, and comparing the amount of attention each received and the intellectual honesty in that coverage, that was kind of the final straw for me after a long journey of uncovering similar injustices. So I created my first horribly made video, but it was a heartfelt creation just to do what little I could to ensure those deaths weren't completely forgotten in the age of memory holding and the wholesale rewriting of history. And so slowly but surely, I just started to consider the significance of reaching people via this medium and kind of planting seeds and spreading ideas and potentially new ways of thinking and speaking about the world. And the more I thought about it, the more this path seemed significant and important and potentially fruitful. So I've decided to commit to it. After nearly two decades of kind of swimming in historical context, I feel like I have quite a bit to say. So now the goal is to try to communicate that as clearly as possible over time.
Are you American or Canadian?
I'm an American. Interestingly, I think that quite a few people have thought that I'm Canadian. I don't know if the way I speak lends them to think that. I've always found that.
Slightly. Yeah. That's why I asked. I was wondering because, of course, it does make a difference. I mean, we're talking about two different countries who have very different attitudes to the rest of the world. Certainly, in the last 100 years or so. I just wondered which perspective you were coming from there.
Yeah, I grew up in also, California, for the most part.
Ah, California, right. Go. I'm always amazed by...
I got out of there.
I'm always impressed by thoughtful people who emerge from California because I think it must be so difficult. You know, it's such a sort of bright, searing sunlight and the heat and, of course, the shallow conceit, like... viciously consumer culture that exists there. It must be so difficult to be an introvert there or to be a thoughtful, sensitive type there.
I think one of the things that made me become a thoughtful person was kind of watching all of that crumble around me. So I grew up in a town that was very beautiful and quaint, and seeing old pictures and seeing old footage, it was almost like my last video that I posted. It was just... there seemed to be something magical about it, and there seemed to be a sense of community and a spiritual element. It just seemed to be a very happy and healthy place. And then over just the span of maybe 2-3 decades, all of that completely crumbled. And now that area is just one of the most impoverished and depressed and unhappy and crime-ridden. It's just a horrible little area. And to see that happen so quickly and so profoundly, and not all of it happened before my eyes, but to hear my parents or grandparents discuss, you know, their lives in that area, and like I said, to actually see footage of what it was like, it's a warning. And I think that kind of forced me to become thoughtful in ways that I may have otherwise not.
Yeah, well, these things definitely can shape you. You mentioned 20 years earlier as like you've been involved in thought and so on for 20 years. Are you, I know I don't want to dox you or whatever, but what kind of age are you? What kind of age range?
I'm mid-30s. So like I said, I was kind of strange from even my childhood in the sense that my interests were very different from those around me. And I felt like the only important things were the things that I've kind of delved into, even at the age of, you know, 14, 15, 16. And so
that's when I started getting politics stuff as well.
Yeah. And I honestly, it wasn't a conscious decision. It was just like these things seemed to matter more than the things that I felt maybe other people were committing their time and attention to. So it was just kind of an organic drift in this direction. And
so, and the internet would have arrived at basically the same time. Like, yes, because that's how it was for me. We seem to be around the same age. We seem to have discovered this stuff at around the same age. So, and the internet was there. Like when you were, I think I was 12 or 13, 11 or 12 when it sort of arrived. And the high school had a room, an internet computer room with seven or eight computers connected to the internet.
Yeah.
And, And there was the web browser. I think it was Lycos was the most commonly used one then. And, you know, you could type in words like, and actually this will surprise some people, but one of the first political things, the concepts that I got into, and I remember typing into the search engine in the mid 90s, was individualism.
Hmm.
That was the first sort of thing. That was the start, as I recall. And, you know, it obviously changed a lot from there.
I should say, speaking of things crumbling, by the way, watching the internet's path, I mean, because we got to see it from its infancy, and I think that maybe that planted a seed of in our minds of what it could be. And I saw the magic and the potential, and seeing just how much that's been clamped down and how much of a threat there is for it to go in a completely polar opposite direction. That's just a kind of a disgusting direction, and such a boxed in and kind of petty and small direction.
It's funny. It's scary how quickly one forgets what it was like before, because I cannot remember, because I was on MySpace back in the day, and then Facebook. And I cannot remember what the atmosphere actually was like on MySpace in terms of censorship. It seems strange to me now, that because people say you never got censored on MySpace, they never banned anyone, they never deleted anyone. That seems baffling to me now, but it's what everyone seems to be saying. So
I don't think it was a thing. I really don't think it existed as a thing back then. I mean, short of maybe somebody making an overt death threat, but I think that those things were so rare and so few and far between that we probably didn't hear about those instances. But nothing else, I think, was touched. It was just, I mentioned the Wild West in some of my videos. It was kind of that atmosphere, but that's what made it beautiful. That's what made it kind of magical. It wasn't this overly controlled entity that was kind of forcing us down these paths. And it was a much healthier, I think.
I mean, obviously, we're seeing this now. We're seeing this now where basically, if you're not progressive, if you're not pro-progressivism, then you're going to have trouble.
Yes. And
this thing recently with Sargon is a watershed. And I really think, I think it's now sinking in, even with those people who were naively celebrating it, you know, 3 weeks ago or whatever. I think it's now sinking into everyone. This it really affects everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, we've gone on, there are several things that we could have gone on to there. But I just wanted to, about the internet and when it arrived and you could Google, but it wasn't Google then, you could search for politics stuff, and that was how it was just there immediately at that very important critical juncture in one's formative, then one's formation, intellectual development. Suddenly the internet just arrived just in time, and there it was. And I mean, is there anything else that you'd like to say about this, because obviously it's a very rich topic. I mean, the 90s, growing up, politics, the freedom, the technology, and now the censorship. You could go, and then we haven't even mentioned California. We could have talked about vertical politics video and the decline of California, because, you know, all of this is fascinating. It's a shame we've only got 25 minutes.
And maybe we could do this again sometime. But one of the things I wanted to talk about is pulling back a bit. I think that we're almost having to counter what's a religion more than kind of a firm belief system on the other side of the spectrum. In other words, on the far left, press and academia, for example, they seem to have worked hand in hand to create kind of a new framework of ideas that don't revolve around logic or factual realities at all, but rather a new moral framework that they seem to have concocted out of thin air. And because one of its core tenets is that all human beings are precisely equal, for example, in every ability and skill set across every group, any achievement disparity, obviously, must be due to something nefarious. And obviously, the something that they point to is oppression and cruelty. And then they use this fuel to organically kind of create an army of people by hijacking their noble instincts towards fairness and justice, looking to reverse this injustice.
Well, just look at this thing now with these poor bloody girls in Morocco.
Yeah.
You know, to me, and again, this is a huge thing that we could talk about. I phoned a friend last night and we talked for 20 solid minutes about that thing. So I wish it had been recorded. I really do, because it would have been a great conversation to put up here on the channel. But that, just what you mentioned there about the manipulation and repurposing of our instincts towards self-destruction.
You know, yeah.
This is so monstrous. And I think that this thing in Morocco has really illuminated that in a very starkly for people.
And it's hijacking our noble instincts as well. And that's what's so upsetting, is it's taking otherwise good people, because a lot of these people on the other side of the spectrum are good people. They're fueled by good intentions and they think they are doing good. But it ends up manifesting itself and becoming kind of anti-maleness, anti-patriarchy, anti-whiteism, anti-westernism, anti-hierarchy. And because we can't discuss or debate that fundamental premise of this kind of equality mythos, and because it's been turned into such a sacred cow and taboo by painting anyone who questions it as potentially hateful and definitely ignorant, we've been stuck in this kind of sick battle in which we're kind of swatting at branches while the root keeps pumping out ever more branches. And it can seem like an impossible battle. And I think that it becomes an impossible battle when we keep swiping at branches as opposed to focusing on the root. And it's kind of like you need to defuse the bomb, you know, at the root as opposed to the periphery.
Sometimes
I feel like they've almost created this zombie army of people who truly do believe, like I said, that they're in the right, that they're fighting for the noble and the just. And that's what makes this so difficult, because you are fighting against people who are acting from positive instincts and noble instincts for the most part, and are fully convinced that they're in the right and that they're doing good. And it makes this much, much more difficult than it otherwise would be.
Yeah, because you're seeing the abuse of our nature, of our psyche, because another context, in another age, the very drives that made those girls go there and put themselves in such absurd danger, those same drives would make them defend their village and a bit trust the outsider as well, you know, and have compassion for everyone they met. This is the trusting nature, especially of Northern Europeans, and they are epitomized. That phenotype is epitomized in both of these girls. I mean, it's just so horrendous.
And it's also taking advantage of that feminine impulse to nurture. So as we become kind of less masculine in general and we move away from the quote-unquote patriarchy and we move in the opposite direction, it's kind of that feminine nurturing instinct that comes more to the fore. And that wants to kind of not only accept, you know, all the refugees in the world and just open our borders and take care of everybody, but do so in such a short-sighted way. Such a way in which you're not truly considering the implications, and you're not being farsighted at all. You're not considering the downsides of your actions. You're just wanting to nurture and help. And again, that comes from a noble place and a good place, but it's ultimately poisonous and it's ultimately so destructive that.
Well, it's been directed in destructive, soul-destroying ways. That's the crucial thing, but. I mean, there's just so much to be said about this. And I really wish I had recorded that phone call last night. It's so annoying to me. But anyway, I don't want this, your stream, to be dominated by that topic, because it's not crucial to what you do and your channel. And it's also it's really an awful topic.
It is. It's not very Christmassy. So,
uplifting. No, it's definitely not. And again, that adds to it as well. That's yet another aspect to it, that this has happened to these families, these two poor bloody families, just days before Christmas. You know that these fucking bastards actually sent photos of their daughters.
I just read that to before.
Anyway, let's move on from this. It's really pissing me off. And I mean, it's probably disturbing a lot of this. another time.
So one of the things that I try to do, I think I mentioned, is I try to pull back. You'll rarely see me kind of zoomed in on specific political issues. I think a lot of people do that and do a very good job at that. And it's just not my thing. I don't know if I could do it as well as they do. And it's just not how I'm wired. And I've always thought that one of the greatest strengths of this kind of subversive element was their being able to muddy the waters and ensure that the battle lines weren't ever drawn with clarity, which keeps them and their position of dominance safe. So it's easy for those with true power to, for example, in America, throw the Republicans to the dogs or throw the Democrats to the dogs or give up on this single issue or that single issue. But all the while, the true cancer remains untouched and spreading in the background. It's essentially hijacking and channeling the energy of the public down inefficient and fruitless paths. So we're spending all of our time rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic while speeding towards an iceberg. And I don't think anybody has the right to demand that we embrace the subversion and destruction of all we love best in the world or help the process along. And I kind of feel
exactly. I mean, this is a crucial thing because we are constantly guilt-tripped. You know, things that we've done in the past or our race has done in the past are used to justify our destruction, our extinction now. And I think that what we have to really assert is no matter how nothing justifies our extinction. Nothing. Oh,
absolutely not.
And I would say, I would say this about the Germans specifically. I mean, the Holocaust, you believe about the Holocaust, whatever anyone else believes, let's say that the mainstream narrative is entirely true. That still doesn't justify the extinction of the German people.
That's a good
point. So nothing does. The British Empire doesn't justify it. Even if you go to the
furthest extreme of their histrionic, you know, rantings, none of that justifies the genocide or extermination of people.
And it's the same with the British Empire. It doesn't justify the extinction of the Brits. Nothing does. And
I would say this.
It's completely fatuous. So go on.
Yeah. I would say I don't hate you and want you exterminated. And in return, I would ask the same from you. And frankly, if you're not willing to give me that, we're going to have a very serious problem. And it's going to be a problem of your making. And I kind of feel like our hand has been forced in a way because I truly feel... And when you have enough historical context, and I've tried very hard to gather enough historical context over these many years, you begin to see just how deep the lies go and how profound the lies are. And just how little truth, there's hardly even a seed of truth in many of these lies. And it's just so audacious and so malevolent. And it's impossible not to get very, very angry. And I'm naturally a passionate person, so... When I'm preaching this magnanimity and nobility of tone, I'm not only doing that for others, I'm doing that for myself to kind of calm myself. Because when you put enough pieces of the puzzle together, you can't help but get very, very angry. And that's one of the things that's launched me down this path. And anger is not the foremost value. It's certainly love for our culture and our people that's the dominant value. But the anger is there, certainly. And it's a driving force. And you can kind of judo these forces into working for you as opposed to working against you if you're very careful. But you have to be careful because things like anger or hatred can very much work against you and can make you less efficient, especially at communicating properly. So yeah, one has to take great pains to kind of harness these forces, if that makes sense.
In the European context... hatred, I mean, it's probably the same in America as well, to some extent. In Europe, hatred is basically illegal.
Yeah.
You can't say something hateful. You can't say something that will promote other people to feeling hateful. And you can't act on hate, even in a non-violent way, a manner. It's like they want to re-engineer, or at any rate, they want us simply to not be able to act on that emotion. And so the emotion becomes, instead of becoming a spur to action, it causes us to become impotent because we can't act on it. So what do we learn? We learn impotence. And that's obviously very unnatural and unfortunate, but I can't really say any more than that, because to do so would be illegal, basically.
And the thing is, yeah, I feel for you guys over there. You have it far worse than even we do here. One of the things about what's happening over there and that's so nefarious is it's not just hatred that's being tamped down. It's the expressions of certain truths that could be in some strange world considered potentially hateful. So it's gotten so extreme that, and what these speech controls do, and I think this is important to say, is that speech controls just organically become thought control, because we're very simplistic animals, basically. When we don't hear things often, we forget them. It's as if they don't exist. So when you can control people and have them not say certain words or give voice to certain sentiments or ideas, those sentiments and ideas and words essentially don't exist anymore, as far as, for all intents and purposes, for all, as far as the public is concerned. They quite literally don't exist. They disappear. So speech controls become thought controls, and they shape our brains in a very profound and fundamental way. And I think that that's the goal. I don't think it's some superficial thing that just don't say these words because people are sensitive. It goes far deeper than that, and there's much more at play here. And it's very upsetting.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think that there is a need for a much more coordinated response to what's going on. I mean, to put it in very crass language, we're being head fucked, and we need to. And I'm sorry to use that. I can't think of a more polite synonym just now. We're being corrupted, manipulated, distorted, misled, whatever you want to say. And I think that, I mean, to get back to those girls, you know, people are saying in the live chat, well, their society told them to be this way, and that's exactly what I've been saying. Their society distorted them and told them that everyone's equal, all cultures are the same, everyone's fundamentally motivated by love. You'll be safe wherever you go, as long as you go with a heart full of love.
And these are lies that killed them. These are lies that put people in danger. They daily put people's lives in danger. When German girls or Swedish girls hear things like this and decide to, for example, walk the streets at night in, you know, maybe less clothing than they would otherwise, or maybe alone, you can literally cost lives or cause a lifetime of, you know, psychological suffering with these lies. And that's what's happening on a daily basis now. And I think it's just one of the greatest crimes that essentially goes unspoken, because we're not allowed to freely discuss these things. But that's what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
Reasons why.
And even on the social media platforms, this is the thing. You know, the First Amendment is really basically irrelevant online, on social media, which is obviously outrageous. That is a joke, because most Americans will, and we're talking in the American context here, most Americans will express their opinions not IRL, but online nowadays. So the First Amendment isn't helping them in the place where they express most of their opinions.
Exactly. I mean, and that trend, of course, is just going to continue. So as we increasingly move to this virtual world, if the virtual world is so tightly controlled, it doesn't matter if we have, you know, freedom of speech on the market corner, because nobody's standing on the market corner anymore. I mean, this is the new market corner. This is the new marketplace, and certainly the new marketplace of ideas. So when there's such strict controls, and they're ever increasing too. I mean, we keep thinking that, okay, this has to be the worst. But then a couple of months later, they outdo themselves. It's an insatiable force on the other side that will not stop. And this is why a lot of my videos have been hinting at a dangerous future, because they're not going to stop. They're going to keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing. There's no brakes on that train. The brakes are going to fall off, and there's going to be a collision. And it's virtually guaranteed at this point, I fear. But I know that we're on the right side of history, to use that sick expression so used by those on the other side. And I know that we're in the right. So all we can do is be as effective as we can possibly be at. And one thing I wanted to say, I think that creators, a lot of those you've had on, for example, an analogy I like to use lately is that this subversive and corrupting force has effectively bent and blunted our weapons. And this process of writing and podcasting and video creating and discussing allows us to kind of sharpen our weapons and create new weapons and distribute them to one another. So clarity, in effect, is essentially our weapon to destroy this poisonous, destructive force. And each of us in our own way is working towards those ends, in my opinion. And that's why I think that gatherings like this are so effective, to bring people, to introduce people to several different voices and several different channels. But the work being done by all of the creators you've had on, it's just so incredibly vital right now, and more so at this point in history than, you know, at any other point. We're at a crossroads right now, and it's an all-important crossroads.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you just said reminded me of something that I was going to see. I had a speech that I was working on for Erkenbrand this year, which is a conference in Holland, and like 2 months ago now. And I nearly, let me see where I is. Here we go. Now, this is a quote that a friend of mine wrote, and I'd like to hear what you think about this, because it links with what you, I was reminded of it by something that you just said. So, okay, the context here of this quote is that what we're now seeing, what we're starting to see, is the right, well, the left has been shameless about taking power for, and we'll just use the terms left and right. We know what we mean by this, progressivism versus conservatism, nationalism versus globalism, etc. So the left has been shamelessly seeking power for 100 years or more, and whereas the right has been, it doesn't come naturally to the right to seek power, I don't think. Now, here we go. This is the quote from my friend. There is the idea that in a society in which truth, with a capital T, is known by everyone and respected, nobody would seek power. Only bad people seek power, and they do so because they need power in order to impose their lie upon the world. Well, if the truth prevails, then nobody needs power because everyone knows and respects the truth. It's only if you're trying to spread lies that you know. And this is I think this is a sort of conservative sentiment. Well, today we are in a situation in which good people are seeking power, something they normally don't do by their nature, because they want to restore society to truth, with a capital T. They want to do this because the lie now rules our social reality, and the lie is driving us into anarchy, enslavement, profound unhappiness, and ultimately oblivion. So what would you say about
that? Yeah, that's well said, and I absolutely agree with that. I think one of the most vital points there is the fact that, and the most kind of meta-level points, is the fact that good people generally don't seek power, full stop. Only when they feel like their hand is forced and they feel like they kind of have to right the ship do they seek power as kind of, I don't want to say an act of desperation, but an act to help, as opposed to, and the other side, I think, seeks power often as from a malevolent root. They want power for power's sake, for example. That's something that's very much unique to the left and hardly seems to exist on the right, if we want to use the left-right dynamic. And I think it goes higher than left and right. I think it's in part...
I know it does, but let's... I know, I'm,
there are many things we...
Let's just... I know, but I'll just set it with general terms, because otherwise we'll never get anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there are several frames through which... And that's a decent one. The left-right dynamic is a decent one. But I think that they often do seem to seek power for power's sake, and that's something that's kind of foreign to many on the right. And they see power not as a responsibility, as I've mentioned several times in the past, not as something that someone wields for the best interests of all involved, but kind of as a privilege. I mentioned being wafted with palm fronds and being fed grapes. I think that they view power as something that gives them things or gets them things or earns them things, as a way to maybe push other people around that have pushed them around. And to be frank and to be blunt about it, I think that many on the left, and this is going to sound very insensitive and I don't mean to offend, but I think that many of them are those types of people who have been very much pushed around and maybe are, I hate to use the word beta, but types of humanity that normally wouldn't attain power and wouldn't attain influence and often harbor some resentment, some deep-seated envy is another great word, and malevolence towards those that do. They're not capable of looking at somebody with great ability or somebody that's attractive or somebody with any positive traits and admiring those and giving credit where it's due but instead that turns into some rage within them. And I think that that happens very often on the left. And I think it sometimes turns them into sick people, especially those that most actively and aggressively quest after power in our world.
See, the gist of the speech that I was going to give is that you were talking about that they see power in a different way. And I think they do. And the gist of the speech was that I think they see power as a sort of element, a sort of an actual force in the world, whereas the right don't.
Yeah.
I think that the left are correct about this and the right are wrong about this.
Yeah. Well, the Frankfurt School has kind of forced us into that paradigm. So it's become that. But it's not that it necessarily should be that. I mean, it all depends. There's so many variables, and it depends on the current situational conditions in any nation. Very rarely are these ideas or concepts kind of one size fits all. They're dependent on lots of variables. But they've created a world in which power is viewed that way, and power kind of has to be viewed that way, if that makes sense.
And it's, yes, exactly. It may as well be viewed that way, because that helps us to use it, to work with it, to handle it.
Yeah.
Whereas looking at it in a more cold way actually doesn't help us. In the same way that it doesn't actually help us to relate to each other if we conceive of each other as bundles of atoms. We have to, you know, add it all up to a person, and that's how we can then handle that person. And I think in the same way, power should be seen as a force in the world, even if it isn't something supernatural or whatever. It may as well be.
This is true. And one of the things I most respect about the Indo-European tradition stretching back is the fact that, like I said, they saw power as an immense responsibility, as almost something of a burden. The Tsar, for example, who was murdered in the Russian basement in 1917 by the Schiff and Rothschild plot, he and his entire family, it makes me sick to talk about, he was a very good and genuine man, and he essentially shunned power. He did not want to take power on because he didn't feel worthy, in a sense, and he didn't feel like he could shoulder that responsibility. And how rare is that? I mean, today, everybody seems to be questing for power everywhere. And like I said, they quest for power because it makes them think of an easier life. It makes them think of ease and comfort. And like I said, just privilege, in a sense. And that's just such a foul way to look at power. Power is a responsibility, especially when you have power over governments or people, power at the highest levels. You're essentially in a fatherly type role over a household. And if you don't look at it that way, things are going to go badly, especially if the world learns to look at it in a different way. Things are going to start.
It's like it's like when you get $1 million suddenly, you have a responsibility to use it correctly, or you can just choose to use it frivolously. I think the same with power, but you know, you could say that money and power are kind of the same thing and whatever. Let's leave that aside. With power, when you gain power, you're put in a position to interact with and control the world in a way that someone who doesn't have power cannot. And so you can use it in selfish, frivolous ways, or you can use power. You can sort of see the position that you're in, that you're now able to influence the world in some sense, in some way, influence reality and take that responsibility seriously.
And if you pull back and try to just look at nature in general, for example, those elements, intraspecies that attain more power than others within their species, they attain more power because they have greater ability to make things work well. They have a greater ability to maybe, you know, organize hunts or whatever the case may be. They can do something that helps out the whole. And those questing for power today and those attaining power today, they don't have that same element within them, and they don't have those same drives. They're not trying to do something greater for the whole. Far more often than not, it's just a means to, frankly, in the modern age, it's a means to fleece the world. It's a means to keep whatever they can, however they can. And I think that a lot of this stems from the fact that most of these people are largely puppets and controlled entities, in my opinion, controlled by higher level forces. So I think that in general, they are people who are willing to compromise themselves, and the people with the least moral and ethical constraints, giving them the greatest freedom to act with impunity, and the last people that should rule as well. So the people with the greatest amount of power are the last people that should have power currently. We've inverted virtually everything. We've allowed our culture and our structures and virtually everything about us to be, and our societies and our nations to be inverted. And it's just, it's sick to watch, and it needs to be fixed, because if it's not, the implications are dizzying, terrifying. I mean, everything's at stake in this game. And it's, yeah. If I can make one more point, it's kind of become the rage to view history as a series of improvements in humanity and human culture, peaking at the present day and set to still improve further. But with the historical context I've gained, I would almost contend it's almost the polar opposite of this. And I can't emphasize how important this concept is, in my opinion. If you view the world through one framework, namely the technological, and gauge human progress and happiness by how many things we own, or how these things have made minor aspects of life more convenient or comfortable, then one could argue we certainly have evolved in a linear fashion. But if you view the purpose of human existence as physical, intellectual, and spiritual development, for example, becoming better and happier and more deeply fulfilled human beings, I think it's clear that we're very seriously backsliding relative to, I mean, if you look at Hellenic Greece, for example, those people seem to be the epitome of actual health and happiness. And they seem to have a lot of things that we've lost. And I think we need to find those things again. I tend to think that these two frames represent two sides of a culture clash, with the Indo-European peoples on one side and a polar opposite force on the other. And it's a bit like we've adopted their foreign framework and played their game for centuries. And I strongly believe it's time to rediscover our own roots and start playing our own game.
All right. Are there any other, because we've got to finish now, unfortunately. This is definitely a hangout that should have been longer. I apologize.
Yeah.
But many people have applied.
I appreciate you giving me a second chance, man, greatly. And like I said, hugely appreciate what you're doing. And I'm sure we can talk again sometime, perhaps. So, yeah, yes, I want to respect your time frame. And so that's
I think I'll be doing more live streams next year than I've done this year, because I've got the live channel, which I can use at any time. So I'll be doing more stuff. So yes, we'll do this again.
One thing I want
to do. Yeah, go on.
If I could do some real quick. Is the fact that I think you mentioned something about maybe not doing this again next year. And I hope that's not the case. I was thinking if all else failed, I've heard some people, some of your guests that were very personable. I honestly don't think anyone could do this as well as you do. You have patience with people, and you have a personableness and several other qualities that allow you to be perfect at this role. But if you could find two or three other people to help kind of shoulder the burden, if you were willing to do that, I don't know. I just hate to see this disappear. And I think everybody else would too. So I don't want to put you on the spot or put pressure on you.
I thank you for saying all of that. I don't know what I said that gave you that impression. I intend to do this next year. I would like it to be the slightly different tenor next year, but that's to do with the evolution of my channel. So we'll see, you know, how that goes. But anyway, so that's another matter. So are there any final things you'd like to say about your own channel and what people can find there?
One last small thing. I would say that I had expected to maybe have a little bit more time to kind of, with my channel, to create a broader framework and wider foundation of ideas and concepts and slowly but surely build atop. But I think things are escalating so quickly at this point that I've kind of had a change of plans. So I plan to start dropping some bombs in the near future, especially in the historical regard, with regards to Indo-European origins and human migrations and cultures. There's so much on that front that has been so deeply subverted and fabricated. And the Smithsonian has a nasty habit of having, you know, thousands of artifacts disappear that don't fit their narrative. And just history has been so deeply subverted and hidden from us that I plan to focus a little bit on that in the future, and several other things that, in other words, I will be escalating my pace quite a bit. And I wasn't planning on that, but I kind of feel like we're there. So my channel will be hopefully producing not only more content, but escalating its pace in terms of tone. So yeah, that's pretty much it. And I hugely appreciate this.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I'm just sorry that it couldn't have been longer.
Yeah.
But, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. So this was Asha Logos, and his channel is linked in the description. Thank you for taking part in Millennial 2018, Asha Logos.
Absolutely. And Merry Christmas and Happy Yuletide to everybody, and enjoy your season.
Okay. I'll be back in about... thank you very much. Thank you. I'll be back in about 10 minutes with Semyogog. So I'll see you then.